from the front lines of the green rush. This is Green Entrepreneur, where business owners talk about how they found success in cannabis and how you can too.
So, hey, everybody, welcome to the Green Entrepreneur podcast. I'm your host, John Small, the editor-in-chief of Green Entrepreneur. And my guest today, very special guest joining us from Colorado, Nancy Whiteman is here. She is the CEO of Wana Brands, which is the number one, yes, the number one edibles brand in sales revenue in the U.S. And that is according to BDSA's brand share report. And Nancy founded this company in her own test kitchen. I want her to tell you guys about that. So we'll talk about that. And prior to that, Nancy was principal with the Whiteman Group, which was a sales and marketing consultancy group. And she previously held a range of senior level marketing and business development positions, including VP of marketing and new corporate ventures for the Paul Revere Insurance Group in Massachusetts. But today we are going to talk cannabis, and we are going to talk about innovations and find out how you went from being this cushy job in the insurance industry and marketing to diving into the unpredictable and scary world of cannabis. Not so scary, but a definitely unpredictable world of cannabis. So Nancy, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your backstory. How did this all come about? As I said, you were in corporate America, you were up there in a very senior level, but you decided to create an edibles company. And tell me a little bit about how that happened and how you went about doing it.
That's true. And Jonathan, I think I might have even said this to you last time we spoke, but I'll repeat it anyway, that I'm constantly joking that I need a better backstory.
It's a good backstory. Well, how could it be better? Okay. Why is that?
Many people in this industry came to it for many very important and moving reasons. They had a family member or a loved one who had positive experiences medicinally with cannabis, or they came at it from, you know, a social advocacy or a justice perspective. I didn't have any of those. The story is that I actually had a neighbor who had started a cannabis edibles company. And my partner and I were talking with him and kind of got interested in what he was doing. And we ended up going into business with him. And that was a short-lived partnership, as many of those early partnerships were. But the truth is that initially, I just saw it as an interesting business opportunity. In fact, I was so not clear on the legal cannabis industry that when he told me that he was making an infused soda pop, I actually said, infused with what?
Right. So you were definitely a newbie to all this.
And I was very familiar with cannabis, but I really wasn't familiar with kind of the legal end of it. And I really wasn't familiar with the medical end of it at all. I really had only experienced it myself recreationally. So what ended up happening is that we founded this company together, and we started making edibles, and to my amazement, started to get incredible feedback from our customers on how important the products were to help them get through chemo, to help them get off of opiates, to help them manage their symptoms of illnesses like MS. And once I really got it, I was a little slow on the uptake, but once I got it, I really became passionate about the power of this plant and what it had the potential to do. And so my backstory is not all that interesting, but what
it's a mid story. It's like you got into it and then you realized,
yes,
you know,
exactly,
the value of it.
I was like a reverse cannabis entrepreneur. So, and then once I was in, I was all in and completely passionate about the power of this plant to be a disruptor in the most positive sense of the word disruptor.
Now, so many people are trying to get into the edibles field, and this is probably an entire lecture series about how you ended up being number one. But what do you think, you know, some of the factors were that got you to this point where you are right now? Like what were some of the things that you applied to your business that you learned from your prior career that helped?
Well, to be honest, I did have, my background was in sales and marketing and branding. As you mentioned, I was the VP of marketing for a large company, and I have sort of a traditional background, if you will. You know, I have an MBA and spent a lot of life in corporate life, et cetera. So I certainly understood the principles of marketing and branding. However, I would say that those things, while they've ended up being very important, didn't end up being the absolute drivers of why Wana became such a successful brand. I think one of the early decisions that we made, which ended up being instrumental, was that back in the day in Colorado, and this was 10 years ago, we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. There actually were very few requirements. It was the Wild West. There was no requirement that you use a third-party lab for potency testing or any other residual solvent or contaminants or whatever. But right from the start, we third-party lab tested all of our tincture so that we knew exactly what was going into the product. And now these days when it's required, it seems like, oh, so what? But back in the day, what it meant is that we were one of the brands that had a very consistent product. And that's incredibly important because a lot of times people are inexperienced with edibles and they're quite nervous about them. So they want to know exactly what it is that they're getting. And they want to know that their experience is going to be the same time after time. So that's an important part of our brand awareness around the fact that we are very consistent. And then one of the other things, and this one actually ended up being more luck, if you will, than
success. There's a lot of luck and success.
Yeah. People who otherwise are probably kidding themselves to a certain degree. But we recognized the gummy category very early on as sort of an up-and-coming category. We, of course, were constantly looking around, and we noticed another company that was using a model where they were buying gummies off the shelf and spraying them with hash oil, and very, very popular. And we thought we could do better than that. We could make them from scratch, and we could infuse them in the cooking process so that the THC would be completely homogenous throughout the product and you wouldn't get a hashy smell or a hashy taste when you use the product. So we began innovating very early with the gummy format, and we developed a recipe in-house, and then we spent years improving it, and we're still to this day improving it. We hired a food chemist to help us. We actually hired an outside consultant whose entire practice, believe it or not, is around gummies. And so we really invested in making a scalable and delicious product that's vegan. Every year we make improvements to make the ingredients cleaner and cleaner.
I have to hear about the guy whose specialty is gummies, the gummy guy. So how does that work? What does he know that we don't know? And how does one get that degree? Do they go to gummy university? I mean, what?
Yes, he has a degree in gummies. It's a master's in gummy science, I believe it is. No, actually, the thing that's funny about it is that gummies are actually a multi-billion dollar category, not just because people love to eat them as a treat, but because they've become so popular as a platform for vitamins, right? And applications. And actually, that's one of the reasons that I think gummies have taken off so strongly in cannabis is that people are actually, first of all, everybody loves gummies, but people are actually very familiar with the idea of, I eat one of these. You know, we don't, you know, open up our vitamin C gummies and say, that was yummy. I think I'll have 10 of them, right? We know them, right? So it's a very familiar and efficient delivery system for cannabis. But back to the gummy guru, as I refer to him, this is actually sort of a funny story. So the food chemist who we were working with at the time said, you know, we've sort of reached my limitations in terms of my gummy knowledge. Gummies are a deceptively complicated product to make if you're planning on scaling them.
Why is that? Just real quickly, why is that, that they're so hard?
They're complicated to get the combination of the gelation so that you can make them in large quantities, but that they don't melt and have other sort of undesirable characteristics.
All right, I cut you off. So tell me the story. Okay.
So anyway, I called up this guy. And now granted, this was 9 years ago or something. And cannabis was not nearly as mainstream as it is today. So I said with a certain amount of trepidation in my voice, you know, I'm calling from the Wana brands and we make gummies and they're a cannabis product. I'm waiting to get the blowback. And he could care less about the fact that they're cannabis. He was kind of an older gentleman. And he said to me a little bit gruffly, he said, are you in the gelatin world or the pectin world? And I said, oh, I didn't know there were worlds, but we're in the pectin worlds. And he said, what kind of pectin are you using? And I said, gosh, I don't know. You know, it's kind of above my pay level. And he said, I have 40 different kinds of pectin on the shelf, and they're all different, and they will all give you a different texture and outcome. And so we actually worked with somebody who had that level of expertise that tried, you know, dozens of different types of pectin until we got to exactly the texture that we wanted and that gave us the ability to scale and not have them get sticky and melty and icky in the summer. So there actually was quite a bit to it. And then we learned a lot about, you know, ways to use flavoring that that helped with bitterness. And we sort of went deep.
You went as deep as you could probably go. And you still like, sounds like you're still...
We're still going deeper.
Going yes. deeper into the world of the gummy and not just the gummy. But I want to talk to you about, because innovation is a big part of your ethos there. And tell me a little bit about some of the innovations that you are focused, that you have focused on in the past that have been successful and that you're focusing on now. I know quick onset has always been something that you guys are very focused on, or quicker onset. So, but tell me a little bit about innovation. Like, how are you innovating the gummy, first of all? Because I know you have more products than just the gummy, but tell me about the gummy.
Let me back up a little bit and talk about what innovation actually means to us. And I would say that we define it rather broadly. We define innovation as anything that you can do that makes the product work more effectively. And it can really start with really at the plant genetic level. What's the strain? What are you doing there? Then moving on to extraction and extracting for terpenes and knowing how to combine those terpenes in different kinds of ways. Those are all important pieces of it. And then, of course, beyond extraction, it's what are you actually putting into the product itself? So we have really focused, you mentioned quick onset. We released, we actually did R&D on our quick onset product for 2 years. And we tried something like 20 different technologies, quick onset technologies, literally everything that we could find in the marketplace. And what we found is that the products that worked the fastest tended to impart an undesirable taste to the product. And the products that gave us an acceptable taste were what we call quicker onset, but not really quick onset. Maybe they worked in 30 minutes rather than an hour, which is nice. It is quicker, but it's not the same as quick. And finally, we found a partner and we began developing a product using their technology. And this product kicks in for most people, and it does depend on whether you've had a big meal or things like that, just how your system works. But most people start to feel it in about 5 to 15 minutes.
As opposed to what was the before you did that innovation?
It's about an hour. You know, a typical onset for an edible is about an hour. I actually consider that to be a fairly major limitation for edibles for a couple of reasons. First of all, we all know the horror story of somebody who eats an edible, waits 15 minutes, says, I don't feel anything, and they eat it.
Hello, I am a walking and breathing version of that horror story. Yeah.
Yeah, we've all been there. And then, you know, by the time it kicks in, it's too much, it's uncomfortable, it's not a good experience. So I never want anybody to have a bad experience with our products. But then it also... there's sort of a planning process, if you will, that you have to go through with a typical edible. You have to be thinking, I'm going to take this because I want to feel a certain way in about an hour. It requires a level of premeditation, if you will, that the quick onset products don't. But the thing that was really innovative about our quick onset product is that because it metabolizes in the bloodstream, it bypasses what we call first pass metabolism in the liver. And first pass metabolism in the liver, when the THC molecule gets there, it converts in form from what we call a delta 9 THC, which is what you get when you smoke or inhale, to an 11-hydroxy THC. And the 11-hydroxy is what gives the edible its sort of characteristic strong body feeling of intoxication. And that's why a lot of people say, oh, you know, when I take an edible, that's kind of it for me for the evening. Our quick onset edibles, they kick in quickly and it feels much more like an inhalation high because it's staying in the delta 9 form and not converting to 11-hydroxy through the first pass metabolism. So it's a lovely experience for people who want the speed and experience of an inhalation cannabis product, but they don't want to inhale. It's also shorter duration. So whereas a typical edible will last somewhere maybe between 4 and 6 hours, the quick onset will last maybe 2 to 3 hours. And so we kind of gave it the name that there are happy hour gummies, because you can take one, or you can go to a concert, you can have an edible, enjoy the concert, and drive home safely. So it really is a very different kind of a product.
For sure. Now, as far as you know, are you the only people using this technology, or how do you avoid copycats, or does it even matter?
To my knowledge, there's certainly other people out there who are talking about having quick onset or quicker onset edible. We have not found anybody yet who is using an encapsulation methodology. Most of them are using emulsification. I won't bore your listeners with the...
Right. It's just a different process.
It's a different process, but it doesn't result in the molecules being as small as ours. So ours go into the bloodstream very, very quickly.
Now, is this only through your gummies, or is it through other products that you make as well?
Right now, it's just in our gummies. We are in the process of R&Ding the formulation for some other products.
So tell me a little bit more about innovation. So that's a really important innovation. I mean, I'm curious, the thinking behind that, it sounds to me like you've answered this question sort of in your answer already, but that the reason that you wanted these quicker onset gummies is because people were having bad experiences taking too much, and it was also taking too long to kick in, and therefore it was hard to time it. Also, like you said, sometimes you wouldn't feel the high, so then you take more and you get even higher. So were you just kind of hearing in the marketplace this was a problem, and you decided we got to figure out how to fix it? Is that how it was, that the origin of it?
Yeah, although I want to make sure that I'm not throwing our classic gummies and edibles as a category under the bus here, because there's many good uses for traditional edibles. And I'm going to use myself as an example. I'm not a good sleeper. And so I love our traditional gummies. My particular favorite, we have a 2-to-1 formulation, which is a 2X CBD to 1X THC. And we also have a 5-to-1 formulation. And they're wonderful for sleep because they do have a long duration. And I don't generally have, you know, a ton of problem falling asleep, but I have trouble staying asleep. So for me, I love the traditional product. And I sometimes, when I am having trouble falling asleep, I actually bundle them together. So I'll take a quick onset, which helps me fall asleep, and I'll take a classic, which helps me stay asleep. So I've learned, because we have, you know, obviously I have access to a lot of different variations, really what works well for me. And that is something that we really do try to do with the portfolio, is give people enough options that they can customize the experience for themselves based on their own endocannabinoid system and what it is that they're trying to achieve.
Well, so tell me about some of the other innovations that you're focusing on, because I'm curious, that was a really good one. Tell me, what else do you have your eyes on? What else is coming up?
Okay. So I think really I'm going to just frame all of this in the context of what we are interested in as a company is, how do we create products that are highly effective, different experiences that people want to have? And there has been a bit, you know, already a bit of a tradition out there of people labeling their product Bliss or Calm or whatever. But the reality is that when you look at many of those formulations, what it's really a shorthand way of saying is, I made this product with an indica, or I made this product with a sativa. And there's not a lot else to it. But there's many, many things that you can do. And we are actively researching many of these, as are many other people. But, you know, we are working with a company that is helping us develop proprietary terpene blends. We are beginning to do a lot of R&D on various rare or minor cannabinoid combinations, CBN, CBC. We have a whole CBD line already. So there's a lot of things that you can do with some of the minor cannabinoids. And then there's also a lot of things that you can do with functional ingredients or supplements, things that we know work for effect in other settings that can be combined with cannabis products. And we have been so limited because of the federal illegality of THC in terms of the type of research that we have been able to do. So I think it's still really early days, but that's really the direction that I think we and many other companies are trying to figure out the same thing, is how do we find sort of that sweet spot or that secret blend that really creates the experiences that people want, whether it's relief from anxiety, relief from pain, improved sleep, improved creativity. There's many different reasons.
Right. And you see it being possibly a combination of the traditional THC and CBD, but other of these, what you call minor compounds, such as CBN. And how do you test that? It is unfortunate that the government will not test it because of the federal illegality of cannabis right now, so that, you know, you can't get funding for these big tests. But as a company, I'm sure you do your own research. I would love to kind of go a little bit behind the curtain of how do you check what the effects CBN and something else might have on people who take it.
You know, we're actually in the process of doing some product testing right now, and we have a panel of people, and we do some, in this particular situation, the formulation we're working on has to do with sleep. So we actually had people take a survey that helps us understand their current sleep situation, how many hours they sleep, how long it takes them to get fall asleep, how many times a night they wake up, all those sorts of things. And then we have several different formulations that we're actually trying, and people are tracking them with a specific format that makes everybody uniform.
Can I be a guinea pig, by the way, for that experiment? We'll talk after.
Just tell me where to send it.
Yeah, exactly.
The dispensary of your choice. So in addition to that, though, we also are really beginning to have a lot of conversations with players who are really doing more traditional research, blood plasma studies, and working with institutions in countries that allow it more than ours do, for example, to try to really quantify and understand more deeply the formulations that we're putting together.
So interesting. So if you are an entrepreneur getting into this space now, what are the kinds of companies that you're looking to team up with now in the sort of in quote unquote innovation space that you think, you know, the industry is really still could use support? And it sounds to me like, you know, independent research labs would be a good company idea, people who specialize in terpene extraction in some way. But tell me what you think might be an opportunity.
There's so much interesting work going on right now with a variety of companies that are in the technology and innovation space that are doing a lot of interesting research in various different things. And so what we really try to do is to find people who are really doing the highest quality work in this field and to partner with them and to learn from them. I think it's a very heavy lift for companies to try to create the full range of IP internally. I think it's important that companies do that to the extent that they can. But unless you have really an enormous team of scientists and technologists that you're working with, there's probably going to be some aspect of the industry that you're not going to be able to cover off on internally, whether it's plant genetics or extraction techniques or learning how to combine various components in different kinds of ways. I think it really does take a variety of people. So those are the kinds of people that we're looking for partnerships. In terms of entrepreneurs entering the space, I think the issue right now is on what basis are you going to compete? If you're an edibles company, for example, or you're a vape company, there's so much competition out there. There's literally thousands of brands. So I think it's really important for companies to articulate what is it about you and your products that create some differentiation in the marketplace, but are not so incredibly niche-y that a dispensary can only sell through maybe 5 or 10 of them a week. With dispensaries having limited shelf space, you still have to be thinking about velocity.
Yeah, I think, you know, it becomes harder and harder to break in and to find a unique angle. It seems like innovation and technology might be a road in. You guys have certainly been very successful at that. Thankfully, you kind of got in early, but you've sort of been able to, seems to me, stay ahead by constantly innovating and pivoting and offering different versions of your product. Well, this has been so enlightening. What a masterclass in entrepreneurship. Thank you so much, Nancy.
Thank you for listening to the Green Entrepreneur Podcast. To find out more about Green Entrepreneur, you can go to greenentrepreneur.com or check out our magazine on newsstands everywhere. Check out our Instagram at Green Entrepreneur. We're also on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and all other social media feeds. If you like this podcast and you'd like to hear more from me, Jonathan Small, check out my other podcast, Right About Now. That's W-R-I-T-E, to get some in-depth interviews into the lives and stories of successful writers, how they got there, what they learned, and what you need to succeed. That's rightaboutnowmedia.com. Until next episode, we'll THC you later.